right, Red Arms. Give it your all.
We'll drink the wine to the cup is dry, and kiss the girls so they'll not cry, and toss the dice until we fly, and dance with Jack of the Shadows.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Tales of a Red Arm. I'm your host, Justin, and today we're doing Chapter 24, Scouting and Discoveries. No need for a recap, because this is a totally different viewpoint, so it's not really tied into anything that just happened in the previous episodes and chapters. I gotta say, this is a favorite chapter of mine, and it's a very popular chapter amongst the entire series due to what happens in it. I won't say it's everyone's favorite, but it is definitely a popular one. I like it, particularly with this book. I'd probably say it's probably my favorite chapter, just due to the fact of the humor. I mean, it's Matt. Who doesn't love Matt? But also what happens towards the end of it, which we'll get into. But it starts out with Matt kind of waking up. And he's kind of just laying in bed, and he's like, I can't really figure out a way to escape here. And he fell asleep the night before while trying to think of a plan. So he's kind of just trying to gather his thoughts since for the last several months, up to possibly a year, it's been covered kind of with a fog pretty much ever since they left Shadar Logoth. And he's like, oh, I'm gonna make this happen. This is gonna happen. Then two serving women show up with hot water in a tray that has a lot of food on it, and they're laughing, and he's, oh, you look so much better already. And soon you're gonna be back on your feet, as long as you listen to the Aes Sedai. And he's like, okay, sure. Trying not to sound bitter, and he's like, oh, I'll let them think I'm going along with it. But his stomach rumbles from the smells. So when they leave, he tosses aside his blanket, hops out of bed, you know, takes a slice of ham into his mouth, and getting water to wash and shave, and he looks in the mirror, and he's like, oh, I do look pretty good, actually. I'm looking better. My cheeks are still hollow. I don't, you know, have quite as much hollowness to them as they had been, but it's improving. Dark circles around my eyes are gone. Yeah, I'm not doing too bad. And my eyes don't seem like they're sunk into my skull like they were. And he's like, hey, every time I eat a bite, it just puts a little bit extra meat on my bones. So he feels a little bit stronger. And eventually I'll be gone before they even know it. Everybody's still surprised that after shaving, he sits down and eats everything, all the ham, turnips, and pears on the tray. But he was sure, they expected him to, like, get back into bed and whatever, but instead he puts on some clothes, puts on his boots. Man, he loves his boots. He looks at his spare clothes, but is like, well, I don't know what's going to happen, so I'm going to just, you know, check it out for now. And he puts his dice cups into his pouch. And he's like, well, at least as long as I have those, I can get all the clothes I need. He's pretty confident in his ability to gamble, which is funny, because gambling is literally, you win some, you lose some by default. And most of the time, it's you lose more than you win. So he opens the door, checks out in the hallway. Nobody's guarding. So he throws a cloak over his shoulder and heads out. He's got to find a way outside, considering he doesn't really know where he is. He hasn't really left his room or anything. But he eventually wanders down the stairs and heads through some quarters and gets some open courtyards. And he finds a door to outside, and he sees the serving women, you know, white-clad novices doing chores, and novices running harder than the servants, and there's a handful of roughly dressed male servants that carry large chests and other heavy things that the Aes Sedai have. He sees accepted in their banded dresses, and even a few Aes Sedai. Aes Sedai don't seem to notice him, and they keep go on do what they're doing. His country clothes were well made, but he doesn't really stand out, but he doesn't look like a vagabond at the same time. The serving men, you know, pretty much explain to him that men are allowed in this part of the tower, so it's not unheard of that this guy's just wandering around in kind of farmerish clothes. But he's like, well, I'm kind of disappointed I don't get to see Egwene, Nynaeve, or possibly even Elaine. And I do. His description of Elaine is like, yeah, she's pretty, even if she does have her nose in the air half the time. He's like, well, she could tell me how to find Egwene and Nynaeve, but I can't really go without saying goodbye. I don't even suppose one of them would turn me in just because they're becoming Aes Sedai. You know, burn me for a fool. They'd never do that. Anyway, I'll take that risk. But then he gets outside under the bright morning sky and he kind of pushes the women out of his mind for a time. And he looks around and sees this little area where the guards, there's some guardsmen in their shirt sleeves and sitting in front of a building, checking on their weapons and armor and all that stuff. And he's like, ooh, that's what I'm looking for. So he heads over there and kind of saunters up to the soldiers and like he hasn't done anything to do. And they kind of just like look him over. And surprisingly to him, nobody challenges his right to be there. But he's just like, oh, is anybody here bridge guard? And the guy's like, bridge guard? It's a stocky, dark-haired man, probably about 5 years older than Matt. So early, mid-20s. And he's like, well, he's got a heavy Ilianer accent, and everyone loves Ilianer accents. Thanks, Bale Doman, for ruining us. he's like, I do be on the bridge guard, and back there even this evening. Why do you ask? He's like, oh, well, I'm just checking out to see what the conditions are like on the other side of the river. Good for traveling, can't be muddy unless you have more rain than I know about. And he's like, well, which side of the river? And his eyes doesn't come off of the oil rag. He's going across his blade. He's like, east. How about the east side? And he's like, no mud. Just white cloaks. I was like, oh boy. White cloaks to be poking their noses into every village for 10 miles. They have no hurt anyone yet. But them just being there do upset the folk. Fortune prick me. If I do not think they wish to provoke us. For they do look us. If they would like to attack, if they could. No good for anyone who want to travel. It's like, Well, what about West? It's like, oh, the same. But then he looks up at Matt and he's like, but you will no be crossing, lad, East or West. Your name do be Matrim Cawthon, or fortune abandon me. Last night a sister herself in person did come to the bridge where I did stand guard. She did drill your features at us till each could speak back to her. A guest, she did say, and no to be harmed, but no to be allowed out of the city either. If you must be tied hand and foot to keep you from it. And his eyes narrow down. He's like, is that you did steal something from them? You do not have the look of those sisters do guest. He's like, I didn't steal anything. It's like, man, burn me. I can't even get a chance to work it easy. They all almost know me. I'm not a thief. This is a very key point because some people argue that he is a thief. But he's really not. He says it himself, and he doesn't steal things, so he's not a thief by default. It's like, oh, no, it is not that I do see it in your face. No thievery. But you do have the look of a fellow who did try to sell me the Horn of Valyr 3 days gone. So he did claim it be all bent and battered as it be. Do you have a Horn of Valyr to sell? Or mayhap it be the dragon's sword? And Matt kind of jumps when the horn is mentioned, but he's like, I was just sick. And now other guardsmen were looking at him, and he's like, oh, well, y'all gotta know. I'm gonna have to leave. He's like, the sisters healed me. I guess the Aes Sedai don't want me to go on before I have the strength back. But he tries to will the men, all of them, just to accept that. And he's like, I'm just a man who is healed. Nothing more. Nothing to see here. Don't have to trouble yourself with me. And the Ilianer's like, you do have the look of the sickness in your face, too. Perhaps that do be the reason. But never did I hear of so much effort to keep one sick man in the city. Which, to be a fair point, there hasn't been any other situation like this. This is literally the first time someone's been doing this. But they also don't know the minor details. And he's like, well, that's why. So I'll be going. They said I had to take walks. Lots of long walks to build up strength, you know. So they kind of just are watching him as he leaves. And he can feel it on their eyes on his back. And he's just like, hey, He just wanted to find out how well his description had been passed around, but if only officers among the bridge guards had it, he might have been able to slip by. He'd always been good at slipping into places unseen, and out. It was a talent you developed when your mother always suspected you were up to some mischief and you had two sisters to tell on you. That's valid. It's like, well, now I've made sure half of barracks full of guardsmen will know me. Blood and bloody ashes. So, there's a good chunk of the tower grounds that are gardens that have trees, leather leaf, paper bark, elms, etc. So he's just wandering around, and eventually he sees his girl and a novice white that is in front of him, striding purposefully towards him. But she's wrapped in her own thoughts. She didn't even really see him at first, but she came close enough for him to recognize her big dark eyes and the way her hair was braided, and grins. He knows this girl, as the memory drifts up from the shrouded depths, but he wouldn't expect to find her here, and he never expected to see her at all. So he grins, and he's like, ooh, good luck to balance the bad. Then he remembers she has quite the eye for the boys. He's like, oh, Elsa. Elsa Grinwell. You remember me, don't you? Matt Cawthon, a friend and I visited your father's farm. Have you decided to become Aes Sedai? She stops short, stares at him. He's like, what are you doing up and about? He's like, you know about that, really? Well, it's not catching. And she kind of like backs up. It's like, I was healed, Elsa. But the dark eyes seemed more knowing than he remembered, and not nearly so warm. He's like, well, what is the matter, Elsa? You look like you don't know me. He's like, oh, I know you. And her manner is very different than he remembers. And he's like, well, she could probably give Elaine's lessons. It's like, I have work to be about. Let me by. And he, like, thinks, like, this is a little strange, considering the path is broad enough for six to walk abreast without crowding. He's like, I told you she's not catching. And she's like, let me by. And he's just like, oh. So he steps to the edge of the gravel, and she passes by the other side, making sure, you know, he doesn't follow her or get any closer. And I find this interesting. She's like, let me by. And I'm like, looking on both sides, I'm like, you could fit three people on either side of me. Like, you could easily walk by. Maybe she's worried that he'd grab her or something like that. I'm like, you have literally a guardhouse not too far away. There's guards. There's a guardsman. There's also probably other Aes Sedai novices, accepted servants. This isn't the first place. I mean, you have gardeners, I'd imagine, because there's gardens nearby. There's trees to be tended to, bushes to probably be shaped and formed or whatever. But she disappears, and he's like, wanted to make sure I didn't follow her. I got the guardsmen, Elsa. Sheesh, my luck isn't in today. We'll get to that. So he heads down a little bit further, and he hears this ferocious clatter, like a bunch of sticks being smashed together. So he gets a little curious and turns off towards it and heads into the trees. Then he brings him to a large expanse of bare ground with the earth beaten pretty hard and about 50 paces across, about 100 paces long. And it's basically a whole bunch of practice swords that have strips of wood bound loosely together and a few real swords and axes and spears and stuff. Like, it's a training ground. And there's pairs of men pretty much stripped to the waist, flailing at each other with more practice swords. And he's just like, some are moving smoothly, like they're dancing, counterstroke, a lot of combat type descriptions here. That's really cool. You should check out. But the ones who are not moving nearly as smoothly are all younger, that are paired underneath the watchful eye of an older man who seems to radiate a dangerous grace even standing still. And we'll get an introduction to him soon. He's like, oh, it's a warder and his students. But he wasn't the only one watching this. About 10 paces from him, half a dozen women with ageless Aes Sedai faces and as many more in banded white dresses of the accepted stood watching one pair of students particularly, bare to the waist and slicked with sweat. Under the guidance of a warder shaped much like a block of stone. And a warder used a short stemmed pipe in one hand, trailing tobacco smoke to direct his pupils. So Matt just sits down underneath this leather leaf I guess it's basically a pine. And he gets these large pebbles out of the ground and just starts juggling them. He doesn't really feel weak, but it's, you know, it's energetic for him to sit to kind of recharge himself. And he's like, well, if there's a way out of the tower grounds, it's not going away while I take a short rest, so I might as well just take a break. But he'd been there 5 minutes. He knew who it was the Aes Sedai and the Accepted were watching. It's like, one of the Blocky Warder's pupils was a tall, lithe man, young man who moved like a cat, and almost as pretty as a girl, Matt thought wryly. Every woman was staring at the tall fellow with sparkling eyes, even the Aes Sedai. I wonder if you'd make a red want to have Warder. Interesting. I hadn't thought about that before. But the tall man handled his practice sword almost as deftly as the Warder's, now and then earning an approving, gravelly comment from his teacher, which that's going to be fun to do later. It wasn't that his opponent, a youth about Matt's age, with red-gold hair, was unskilled. Definitely was very skilled, at least from what Matt could see. But he didn't know much about swords. The golden-haired man met every lightning attack, turning away before the bound strips could strike him, and even launched an occasional attack of his own. But the handsome fellow just counters that and flows back into his own pace of the heartbeat. So Matt shifts the pebbles from both hands into one hand, keeps them spinning in one air, and he doesn't think he'd care to face either of them, and definitely not with a sword. Then the Warder shouts out, "Break!" It sounds like rocks emptying out of a bucket. And it's probably all the smoking he does. But chests are heaving, the two men let their practice swords fall to their sides, and they're just soaked in sweat. And it's like,
"You can finish till you finish my pipe. But rest fast. I'm almost at the Donal."
So they had stopped dancing about. Matt took a good look at the kid with the red and gold hair and let the pebbles drop. He's like, "Burn me, I'll bet my whole purse that's Elaine's brother. The other one's Galad, or I'll eat my boots." Man, he loves his boots. And on the way from Toman Head, it seemed that half of Elaine's conversations had been of Gawain's virtues and Galad's vices. He's like, "Oh, Gawain has his own vices," at least what Elaine had said. "But they were very small. To Matt, they sounded like the sort of things no one but a sister would consider vices really at all. But for Galad, when Elaine was pinned down, it sounded like what every mother said she wanted her son to be. And Matt doesn't think he wants to spend much time in Galad's company, mostly because he's a goody two-shoes and Matt's kind of a rapscallion. A rogue. But definitely not a thief." So Gawain blushes whenever Galad is mentioned, and even when she thinks no one's watching. But there's like a ripple passing through the watching women when Gawain and Galad stop. And they appeared at the point of like stepping forward as one, but Gawain caught sight of Matt and said something quietly to Galad, and they both walked by the women. And the Aes Sedai accepted a turn to follow them with their eyes, and Matt just scrambles up and he's like, "Oh, hello there." And Gawain's like, "Oh, you're Matt Cawthon, right? I thought I recognized you from what Egwene said and Elaine's. I understand you were sick. Are you better?" He's like, "Oh, I'm fine, yeah." And he wasn't sure if he was supposed to call Gawain my lord or something, but he refused to call Elaine my lady, so not that she had demanded it, but it's like, "Yeah, I'm not going to do her brother any better." Galad's like, "Did you come to the practice yard to learn the sword?" He's like, "Oh, I was just out walking. I don't know much about swords. I think I'll put my trust in a good bow or a good quarterstaff. I know how to use those." And then Galad's like, "Well, if you spend that much time around Nynaeve, you'll need a bow, quarterstaff, and sword to protect yourself, and I don't know whether that would be enough." And Gawain looks at him wonderingly, like, "Galad, you just very nearly made a joke." And Galad's frowning at him and going, "I do have a sense of humor, Gawain. You only think I do not because I do not care to mock people. Like, I feel like you just mocked Nynaeve." But Gawain's like, "Whoa, what just happened?" Like, "Yeah, you should learn something of the sword. Everyone can do with a little sword of knowledge these days. Your buddy Rand Al-Thor carried a most unusual sword. What do you hear of him?" He's like, "Oh, I haven't seen him in a long time." But he notices that when looking at Gawain, Gawain had mentioned Rand, he had a bit of intensity in his eyes. And Matt's like, "Oh, Light, does he know about Rand? He couldn't possibly. But if he did, he'd be denouncing me for a dark friend just for being Rand's friend. But he knows something." And I think this is the part where Gawain is showing that he is aware of Elaine's more or less infatuation with Rand. So he's kind of seeing it as like, do I protect my sister from this farm boy sheep herder, or do I gather information on him or whatnot? So it's more of a brother's curiosity about his sister's interest. And it's like, well, swords aren't the be all end all, you know, I could do fairly well against either of you, I think, if you had a sword and I had a quarterstaff. So Gawain scoffed, just trying to like swallow a laugh very politely. He's like, "You must be very good." Glad's face was quite disbelieving. And it's like, well, maybe they thought he was making a wild boast. Maybe it's because he had mishandled questioning the guardsmen. Maybe because Elsa, who had the eye for the boys, wanted nothing to do with him. And all these women are staring at Galad like cats watching a jug of cream. Aes Sedai, accept it or not, they're just women. Or they're still women. And he's like, well, all these things pop through his head, but he rejects them angrily, especially the last. He's like, he's going to do it because it's going to be fun. And it might earn him some coin. And his luck would not even have to be back. He's like, well, how about this? I'll wager 2 silver marks to 2 from each of you that I can beat both of you at once. Just the way I said. And you can't have fairer odds than that. There are 2 of you and 1 of me, so 2-1 are fair odds. And he almost laughs with the look on their faces. And they're like, Goblin's like, Matt, there's no need to make wagers. You've been sick. Maybe we'll try this when you're a little bit stronger. Glad's like, it would be far from fair, especially being a wager. I'm not going to take your wager now or later. You're from the same village as Egwene, aren't you? And I would not have her angry with me. Ho ho, someone is smitten. He's like, what does she have to do with this? Thump me once with one of your swords, and I will hand over a silver mark to each of you. If I thump you till you quit, you each give me 2. You don't think I can do it? Don't you think you can do it? And Glad's like, well, this is ridiculous. You'd have no chance against 1 trained swordsman, let alone 2. I'll not take advantage.
Do you think that?
Added a graveled voice. The blocky warder joined them. Thick black eyebrows pulled down in a scowl.
You think you two are good enough with your swords to take a boy with a stick?
It's like hammer guiding. It wouldn't be fair. Hamar, sorry. And he has been sick. There's no need for this.
To the yard.
Hamar looks back over, or jerks the back of his head over to the shoulder and to the yard. And Galad and Gawain look at Matt regretfully, but then head over. The warder looks up Matt and he's like,
are you sure you're up for this, lad? Now that I look closely at you, you ought to be in a sick bed.
He's like, I'm already out of one and I'm up to it. I gotta be. I don't want to lose my 2 marks. Amar's eyebrows rise in surprise and he's like,
oh, you mean to hold that wager, lad?
He's like, I need the money. His laughter cuts off abruptly as he turned to the nearest stand that held quarterstaffs, and his knees almost buckled. But he stiffens them quickly enough, so he doesn't think anybody would notice, maybe think he just stumbled. But then at the stand, he takes time looking, choosing out a staff. And then about 2 inches thick and almost a foot taller than he was. So I would say probably close to 7.5 feet. About 2 inches thick. He's like, I gotta win this. I open my full mouth. Now I gotta win. I can't afford to lose those 2 marks. Without that to build on, it'll take forever to win the money I need. So he turns back the quarterstaff in both hands before him. Gawain and Galad were already waiting out where they had been practicing. He's like, ho, I gotta win. And he mutters to himself, luck. Time to toss the dice. And Hamar gives him an odd look. He's like,
You speak the old tongue, lad.
Matt just stares at him for a second, not really saying anything. And it's kind of cold to his bones. And he's like, remember the wager. 2 silver marks from each of you against 2 from me. And there's a buzz rising up from the accepted as they realize what's happening. Yeah, I said, I watch in disapproving silence. Gawain and Galad split apart, one to either side of him, keeping their distance. Neither with a sword more than half raised. They're like, no wager, there's no wager. That being Gawain. And then Galad's like, hey, I'm not going to take your money like this. And Matt's like, I mean to take yours. And Hamar's like,
done. If they have not the nerve to cover it, I'll pay it myself, lad.
And Gawain's like, well, all right. If you insist, done. And Galad's like, all right, done. Let's put an end to this farce. And then this part I get to read because it's fun. This is the best part of the chapter. The moment's warning was all Matt needed. As Galad rushed at him, he slid his hands along the quarterstaff and pivoted. The end of the staff thudded into the tall man's ribs, bringing a grunt and a stumble. Matt let the staff bounce off of Galad and spun, carrying it on around just as Gawain came within range. The staff dipped and darted under Gawain's practice sword and clipped his ankle out from under him. As Gawain fell, Matt completed the spin in time to catch Galad across his upraised wrist, sending his practice sword flying. As if his wrist did not pain him at all, Galad threw himself into a smooth rolling dive and came up with a sword in both hands. Ignoring him for the moment, Matt half-turned, twisting his wrist to whip the length of the staff back beside him. Gawain, just starting to rise, took the blow on the side of his head with a loud thump, only partially softened by the padding of hair. He went down in a heap. Matt was only vaguely aware of an Aes Sedai rushing out to tend Elaine's fallen brother. I hope he's all right. He should be. I've hit myself harder than that, falling off of a fence. He still had Galad to deal with, and from the way Galad was poised on the balls of his feet, sword perfectly raised, he had begun to take Matt seriously. Matt's leg chose the moment to tremble. Light, I can't weaken now. But he could feel it creeping back in, the wobbly feeling, the hunger as if he had not eaten for days. If I wait for him to come to me, I'll fall on my face. It was hard to keep his knees straight as he started forward. Luck, stay with me. From the first blow, he knew that luck, or skill, or whatever had brought them this far, was still there. Galad managed to turn the one with a sharp clack, and the next, and the next, and the next. But strain stiffened his face. That smooth swordsman, almost as good as the warder's, fought with every ounce of his skill to keep Matt's staff from him. He did not attack. It was all he could do to defend. He moved continually to the side, trying not to be forced back, and Matt pressed him, staff a blur. And Galad stepped back again, wooden blade a thin shield against the quarterstaff. Hunger gnawed at Matt as if he had swallowed weasels. Sweat rolled down into his eyes, and his strength began to fade as if it leached out with sweat. Not yet. I can't fall yet. I have to win. Now. With a roar, he threw all his reserves into one last surge. The quarterstaff flicked past Galad's sword and in quick succession struck knee, wrist, and ribs, and finally thrust into Galad's stomach like a spear. With a groan, Galad folded over, fighting not to fall. The staff quivered in Matt's hands on the point of a final crushing thrust to the throat. Galad sank to the ground. Matt almost dropped the quarterstaff when he realized what he was about to do. Win, not kill. Light, what was I thinking? Reflexively, he grounded the butt of the staff, and as soon as he did, he had to clutch it to hold himself erect. Hunger hollowed him like a knife reaming marrow from a bone. Suddenly, he realized he was Not only the Aes Sedain accepted were watching, all practice, all learning had stopped. Warders and students alike stood watching him. Hamar moved to the stand beside Galad, still groaning on the ground and trying to push himself up. The warder raised his voice to shout,
"Who was the greatest bladesmith of all time?"
From the throats of dozens of students came a massed bellow, "Jerome Gaidin!"
"Yes,"
Hamar shouted, turning to make sure all heard.
"During his lifetime, Jerome fought over 10,000 times in battle and single combat. He was defeated once by a farmer with a quarterstaff. Remember that. Remember what you saw."
He lowered his eyes to Galad and lowered his voice as well.
"If you cannot get up by now, lad, it is finished."
He raised a hand, and the Aes Sedain and accepted rush to surround Galad. Matt slid down the staff to his knees. None of the Aes Sedain even glanced his way. One of the accepted did, a plump girl he might have liked to ask for a dance if she were not going to be Aes Sedain. She frowned at him, sniffed, and turned back to peering at what the Aes Sedain were doing around Galad. Gawain was on his feet, Matt noted with relief. He pulled himself up as Gawain came over. "Mustn't let them know. I'll never get out of here if they decide to nurse me from sunup to sunup." Blood darkened the red gold hair on the side of Gawain's head, but there was neither cut nor bruise apparent. He pushed two silver marks into Matt's hand with a dry, "I think I'll listen next time." He noticed Matt's glance, touched his head. "They healed it, but it was not bad. Elaine has given me much worse, for more than once. You were good with that." "Not as good as my Da. He's won the quarterstaff at Beltane every year, as long as I can remember. Except once or twice when Rand's Da did." That interested look came back into Gawain's eyes, and Matt wished he had never mentioned Tam Al-Thor. The Aes Sedain and the Accepted were all still clustered around Galad. "I must have hurt him badly. I did not mean to do that." Gawain glanced that way. There was nothing to be seen but two rings of women's backs, Accepted white dresses making the outer ring as they peered over the shoulders of crouching Aes Sedain and laughed. "You did not kill him. I heard him groaning. So he should be back on his feet by now, but they are not going to let this chance pass now that they have their hands on him." "Light. Four of them are green, Aja." Matt gave him a confused look. "Green, Aja? What does that have to do with anything?" And Gawain shook his head. "It doesn't matter. Just rest assured that the worst Galad has to worry about is finding himself warder to a green Aes Sedain before his head clears." He laughed. "No, they would not do that. But I will wager you those two marks of mine in your hand that some of them wish they could." "Not your marks," Matt said, shoving them in his coat pocket. "Mine." The explanation had made sense to him, or little sense to him, except that Galad was well. All he knew of what passed between warders and Aes Sedain were the pieces he remembered of Lan and Moraine, and there was nothing there like Gawain seemed to be suggesting. "Do you think they'd mind if I collected my wager from him?"
"They very likely would,"
Hamar said dryly as he joined them.
"You are not very popular with those particular Aes Sedain right now."
He snorted.
"You'd think even green Aes Sedain would be better than girls just loose from their mother's apron strings. He isn't that good looking."
"He is not," Matt agreed. Gawain grinned at both of them until Hamar glared at him.
"Here,"
the warder said, pushing two more silver coins into Matt's hand.
"I will collect from Galad later. Where are you from, lad?"
"Menetherin." Matt froze when he heard the name come out of his mouth. I'm from the Two Rivers. I have heard too many of the old stories." They just looked at him without saying anything. I think I will go back and see if I can find something to eat." Not even the mid-morning bell had rung yet, but they nodded as if it had made sense. It's just, it's a great story. I love it. It's a great part. There's not a whole lot in ways of like historical aspects. The only one really historically is the Jerome part, where it's, I'm trying to remember the swordsman in real life who was like a great swordsman in Japan, I believe. I'm trying to remember his name. I can't. It's escaping me at the moment. And basically, he had defeated tons of people in combat and whatnot, but he got beat by a farmer with with a quarterstaff. Gosh, why am I forgetting his name? Somebody, if somebody knows what it is, go ahead and feel free to get a hold of me and let me know, because it's literally escaping me right now. But just the way the fight goes, where Gawain gets collapsed early on and Galad holds out longer, it just shows that Galad's skill is greater than that of Gawain's. But they're both really, really good, and there's two of them versus one of him. But a dual-wielded blade, or a single blade versus, you know, a two-handed quarterstaff, you're more than likely to be more successful with taking on two people with a quarterstaff than you would be with a sword. Not to say that you couldn't do it, but it's just much easier. But, yeah, that's funny. The whole thing with, like, little bits about, you know, the Green Aja, four of them being Green Aja around Galad as they're taking care of him and everything, is Galad is highly sought after by Aes Sedai because he's really good looking. But he's also really skilled and talented. But the joke goes that, you know, if you're not careful, you might find yourself a ward or two in Aes Sedai before your head clears and whatnot, is a joke basically saying that, you know, they're, now that they got their hands on him, somebody might, you know, try to take him, quote unquote, forcefully as a warder against his will, which is not the case because that's kind of against Tower law, and the Aes Sedai would not be looked on well for that, but you'll learn more about that later on in the series. But I liked the part where Matt's talking about, you know, he knows what happens between warders and Aes Sedai, what he remembers of land and moraine from like the attraction aspect. But he points out that there's nothing like that there between land and moraine. At least what Gawain is suggesting. Like, they're friends, but there's no romantic interaction at all from Lan and Moraine. Just two old friends of 20 years traveling with each other and stuff. So, yeah. It's the easiest way to explain it. But it's little bits of information that are pretty helpful in that regard. And the fact that Matt says Manetherin instead of the Two Rivers is interesting. But after this, after he tells them and, you know, heads off, he keeps the quarterstaff because no one told him he had to put it back. And he walks slowly until the trees make him disappear. But then he leans against the staff, is like he was holding him up. And he's like, well, if I pulled my coat open, you could probably see where the hole in my stomach is, growing larger as it pulled the rest of him in. But he wasn't thinking of hunger. He was hearing voices in his head.
You speak the old tongue, lad.
Manetherin. It makes him shiver, and he's like, oh, light help me. I keep digging myself deeper and deeper. I gotta get myself out of here, but how am I gonna do that? So he hobbles back into the tower like an old man. An old, old man. And he just keeps thinking, how? And that's the end of the chapter. It's a fun little exciting adventure, I guess, for Matt. But yeah. Not too long, not too short. Good adventure, good action. Minor knowledge. But definitely good. But yeah, that was the end of chapter 24. Hopefully you guys will pop in the next time to take part of chapter 25. Coming up, we're almost, not quite, but we're getting to almost halfway through the book. So I'm sure the excitement will probably hit closer to the end of this chapter, for most of you, at least what you might deem excitement. But yeah, it's starting to rush together. So now that we're getting more character point of views and whatnot. But this next chapter should be quite interesting due to the nature of the content. we're going to be jumping back to Egwene's point of view and all that jazz. But yeah. So thanks everybody for hanging out. If you'd like to reach out and let me know any comments or questions or anything like that, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to me on Facebook at Tales of a Red Arm, or on Twitter as at Tales of a Red Arm. You can also reach me directly through talesofaredarm@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you guys. And hope everyone has a fantastic evening or morning if it's wherever you're at. And hopefully you'll join for chapter 25 and on beyond that. But we'll go ahead and end it here now. And as always, look forward to spending another episode with you guys. Until then.
We drink all night and dance all day, and on the girls we'll spend our pay. And when we're done, then we'll away to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll toss the dice however they fall, and some of the girls be they short or tall, and follow young Matt wherever he calls, to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll toss the dice however they fall, and some of the girls be they short or tall, then follow Lord Matt wherever he calls, to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll give a yell with a bloody curse, and hog the maids, it could be worse, as we ride away with the dark ones first, to dance with Jack of the Shadows. Yeah!